You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I am Tristan Carcino. I thought this was episode 8.
Well, yeah, I can look this up.
I thought we were on episode 8, but either way, our disagreements about which episode this is aside, welcome, we're here. Episode number 9. Well,
your cap to the master.
I might have to get a snowball to the balls because of that. So it's episode number 9. We are live here from Boulevard Park, drinking on a cool, tasty Rainier in the bottle.
It doesn't get any better than that.
This is the official drink of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, and in the bottle especially is the official drink.
Yeah.
But speaking of Rainier, we're going to be doing a lot of talking about the city that Rainier does not come from.
Our sister to the south, our little sister, I would say, the city of Portland.
Our minute sister. You might even think this sounds like the Fabulous Portland Cast this week. Sing! You like that one?
That's pretty, I do
pretty
like
good.
That one.
Pretty good. But yeah, we have a lot of talk about Portland and the state of Oregon, but then also the normal business, the normal hometown business.
We're going to cover some 206 business.
Our intro, I'd be in the town all day. I don't know if that applies to you, but we'll talk about that in a second. First off, we're recording this on a Wednesday night, but it'll be coming out on Thursday morning. So there's a big night tonight. A lot of games going on in the world of sports, and the first one that I want to talk about is the showdown on the farm, Stanford and Oregon, probably for Pac-12 North champion.
Game of the year in the Pac-12, without question. You know, the Huskies hope to be able to get into that mix, but after losing to both of these teams, had to concede Pac-12 North superiority, and now very curious to see how they match up. I mean, Oregon seems like an unstoppable juggernaut, but they seemed like that last year, and Stanford went into Eugene and won. So this is maybe not quite as good a Stanford team, but I think at home they can give Oregon a test.
Who are you cheering for in this game?
That's such a tough call. I guess Oregon.
I think that my perspective on this is kind of controversial, but I've been wholeheartedly cheering for Oregon kind of this whole season except for against UW. I am sick of the SEC winning the national championship. If it has to be Oregon, so be it.
But can you consider how insufferable Oregon fans are going to be if they have a national championship?
I'm
going to
say something else here. I don't want to say it. I think Oregon deserves a national championship.
I mean, in the sense that they've been an elite team for a lot of years, and to the extent that anyone deserves it, yeah, I see what you're saying.
I think Mariota is one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I think that Oregon's been really good for a long time, and I don't want them to lose to Stanford. How about, let's say that. I don't want the Pac-12 to be brought down a notch just because they lost one game to Stanford.
I mean, what was weird for me was when they played Auburn in the national championship, and I didn't really go into that game intending to root for Oregon, but my gut rooted for Oregon.
I was cheering for Oregon. I know that this is controversial. I feel like I shouldn't have just said the words that I just said.
We may be excommunicated from Washington.
Oregon winning the national championship doesn't make the Huskies better or worse.
It's true.
And I know that there are people out there who will say that it affects recruiting. The difference between Oregon recruiting right now and if they won the national championship is not going to be that great.
Yeah, we didn't get that much of a boost when we won the national championship.
Well, that was a different era in recruiting also. But I am sick of the SEC. I hate the SEC way more than I hate Oregon.
I mean, they're much more like us.
Oregon?
Yeah.
Or the SEC. I mean, we're talking a lot on this podcast. I'm talking about delicious beer from Portland. I'm talking about the basketball team who I have to cheer for now, who happened to play in Oregon. I mean, there's a lot. I can't say these words. It's just crazy. And also, looking back on that national championship game, just for a second here, if Cam Newton, I mean, I liked Cam Newton at the time. I love Cam Newton now, though. I would be cheering for Auburn.
It's true. My feelings about Cam Newton are much stronger.
I kind of, at the time, thought that Cam Newton was just a giant cheater. But now I really like the way he plays. Partially because he plays for the Panthers.
It was hard to separate him from the whole SEC thing.
I just hate the SEC so much that I want the Pac-12 to win. I cheered for USC for a long time, too.
Do you feel like Stanford would have a chance of getting in the national championship game if they won?
I hate Stanford more than I hate Oregon.
Wow. Now we're really getting into the controversial statements.
I hate everything about Stanford football. I hate everything about Stanford basketball also. I hate Stanford 360 degrees.
How about
all
the academics?
Around. I think they're overrated. I hate Tyron Willingham. I hate Condoleezza Rice. I think David Shaw is not that good of a coach. I hate everything. I hate Andrew Luck. Right now, Stanford 2 weeks ago did a real number on Seattle sports. Stanford beat us, and then Andrew Luck beat the Seahawks the next day.
But can I introduce a counterpoint?
Dennis Dixon didn't beat the Seahawks the next day.
That's true.
Is his name David Dixon? Dennis Dixon. There was a David Dixon, right?
There was a center from UW
okay. Many
years ago. But can I introduce a counterpoint? Doug Baldwin and Richard Sherman, even though Richard Sherman hates Jim
Richard
Harbaugh.
Richard Sherman hates Jim Harbaugh.
But I don't think he hates Stanford. I think he just hates
Jim Harbaugh. I hate
Jim Harbaugh,
too. I don't hate Chip Kelly. I kind of hate Chip Kelly.
I love Chip Kelly.
I also kind of love Chip Kelly. I don't know what's going on right now. I'm saying words that I was not anticipating that I would say. But I like how much Richard Sherman hates Jim Harbaugh.
You do like that.
And it doesn't make me feel any better about Stanford.
Suffice it to say that this will never be called the Fabulous Stanford Cast.
Yeah. The Stanford Palo Alto Cast. Pelton Alto Cast. So anyway, I'm cheering for Oregon tomorrow.
Do you think they're going to win?
I think that they're going to win.
Well, what percentage odds?
95% of the time.
95?
They're
wow.
a significantly better team than
I
Stanford.
Don't know if I would put it higher than 70 to 75.
I think that their offense is going to come out like gangbusters. I don't know if this current Oregon program is going to last for that long, but they're going to win this game, and I think that they're going to the national championship. And you know what? I will be outraged if for some reason Florida State and Ohio State and Oregon and Alabama are all undefeated. And if Oregon is squeezed out of there, I don't think that they will be. I will be outraged if that happens.
I would probably be outraged on their behalf as well.
I want the full might of Nike on this.
I would rather that they get to the national championship and lose to the national championship. I think that would be my preference. If you go by Sager and Predictor, it's a 6.6-point spread, and home field advantage is 3.6 points this season. So that would be an Oregon minus 3 is a spread, and you know, probably somewhere in the 65% range. So, but you say 95%, so you heard it here first. And Oregon going undefeated.
So also, tonight in sports, on top of that, we talked about that for a lot longer than I was anticipating.
Who knows what feelings we're going to dredge up here on this
podcast. I'm going to start talking bad about Stanford again. That felt good. It felt like kind of a relief. I feel a lot.
Getting it off your
chest. A lot of hatred for Jim Harbaugh right this second. And a lot of hatred for Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck is so overrated as a quarterback.
It's like
a
sidetrack.
At best, the 12th best quarterback in the NFL. Jim Harbaugh is at best the third best coach in the NFL.
Wow, that's really
harsh. He's a really good coach.
Yeah, you can't hate Jim Harbaugh.
There's also a TNT doubleheader coming up tonight. Clippers versus Heat, and then also Lakers-Rockets.
And I wrote today about Dwight Howard and the Rockets after watching them play down in Portland the other day, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
And finally, the Sounders play in Portland, the second leg of the playoffs, down 2-1.
Yeah, it was not good on Saturday night. Sounders hoping to carry over the momentum from their one-game playoff win on Wednesday, but conceded fairly early in that game, and then a second goal to go down 2-0. And Osvaldo Alonso pulled back one goal in the late stages to give some hope going down to Portland for that second night.
It was a huge goal, and I wasn't sure whether the MLS, when I saw this, did home goals or not, because if they do, they would be over.
Yeah.
But the Sounders, all they need to do is win 1-0 down there, which
yeah, so
is
you
not
get a lucky
inconceivable.
Goal and hang on and play defense and get to extra time. I think that's got to be the goal.
They haven't looked great of late, but there's a chance going into it. And that Alonso goal meant that there's a chance.
Yeah.
If it was 2-0, I wouldn't be paying attention to this.
The stunning result is
we'd still be talking about Stanford right now.
Apparently, more teams have won when they've won lost the home leg of the first game of that aggregate series than have lost, which I it's mind-boggling to me.
I feel like there's a chance.
The weird thing is we still don't know who's going to be in goal for the Sounders, whether it's going to be Hahnemann, who started on Saturday when Spurning was on a red card, or whether Spurning will return. So that's kind of an important factor going into
why
the
would
game.
They not start Spurning?
I mean, Hahnemann started late in the regular season after Spurning gave up the 9 goals in 2 games. So it's been back and forth for Ziggy Schmidt with that position. But it really doesn't matter who's in there. It matters whether the back line will not inexplicably decide to let someone run free through their box.
The back line, and I heard that Portland has a really good counterattack. And I noticed in that first match, I was looking at the stats as much as you can for soccer, after that first one, the Sounders controlled possession. They had twice the amount of shots that Portland had. By all statistical things that you can see with soccer, the Sounders dominated that match. I really feel like there's a chance here.
It was a very traditional Italian performance from the Timbers. You know, the defend in the box and then get out and counter and pick up an opportunistic goal when you can. Yeah, it was really frustrating when, you know, I was kind of watching that with half an eye because I was down in Portland, actually, at the Blazers game that night. But it seemed like the Sounders had so many opportunities. Dempsey had a couple of free kicks that were just off. So
I think Dempsey gets a goal tomorrow.
I kind of got that feeling, too.
I think Dempsey gets a goal. I percentage chance of winning.
30.
I think it's about 30. That's a pretty significant chance.
Yeah, it's not bad. I think the most likely outcome is like a 1-1 game, and the Timbers still advance on aggregate.
Okay, so speaking of Portland.
Continuing the theme.
Here on the Fabulous Portland cast, you had some feelings and an update about you not being in the town all day. And really, you're going to be spending a lot of time outside of Seattle. We'll talk about that in a future podcast. But you're going to Bristol and New York coming up.
I am. But a little shorter trip this time around. That made the 2.5-hour trek down I-5 on Saturday night for the opener against San Antonio. And then again Tuesday night to see the Rockets. The Blazers split those two games, which probably leaves us about where we thought we were with them. Where they're a really good offensive team.
Were you just calling the Blazers we?
No, we as in outside observers.
Okay, the collective we.
We thought we were with them.
Okay.
Which is they're a really good offensive team with some defensive questions and, you know, somewhere around 500. I think maybe a little bit above 500 at this point.
I watched their game a couple nights ago against Houston, and I thought that the Blazers played pretty well. Obviously, Damian Lillard is awesome. Marcus Aldridge is good. I thought Robin Lopez was really good, though.
Yeah, he had foul trouble, but they've come to really depend on him, which is surprising. He played 40 minutes against San Antonio.
He's starting at center.
He is starting. And when he had foul trouble against Houston, Joel Freeland has a hip injury, so he's kind of day-to-day. They had to throw Myers Leonard, their lottery pick last year, in there.
And he looks like he's 10 years old. Seeing he came out onto the court, and I was like, who is that kid? Like, what is he doing in the NBA?
What a contest, like, play of the NBA for the day.
He looks like he's 15 and he looks lost on the court.
Yeah, so I think they might have missed on that pick, and that's going to be kind of an issue going forward.
I have to mention, before you go into this other thing, that the Pacers, who I consider we in a lot of situations, Pacers, I consider them my team, 4-0 with a huge victory over the Bulls last night.
I believe it's 5-0.
5-0.
Not to correct you, but last undefeated team in the NBA, the Indiana Pacers.
Okay, very quickly, chances that the Pacers are the best team in the NBA?
I don't know if I'd say higher than like 10 to 15, just because there's still a lot of teams, even if you want to start with the proposition that Miami isn't the best team anymore. There's a lot of
the Bulls.
It was very exciting, but you know the Bulls are struggling. Derrick Rose is rusty. I wrote about that yesterday on Insider.
I think Derrick Rose is worse because he has a goatee and it looks really stupid.
That seems unlikely.
He looks like a catfish. Oh, having a goatee is the worst.
Didn't he already have a goatee, or did you just have the mustache before?
A mustache is fine. Goatee is bad.
Okay,
it's the worst facial hair
you can have. You know, if I see him, I'll pass that along.
Yeah, pass that along when you're interviewing him. Yeah. Your play would improve significantly. I think there's a chance that the Pacers are the best team in the league.
There's definitely a chance.
It's kind of unfortunate that probably the two best teams in the league, Pacers and the Heat, are in the same conference and they can't meet each other in the finals.
I wouldn't rule out, you know, San Antonio is still in that mix. They, even after losing at Portland, and, you know, the Clippers have had, well, they lost pretty badly on Wednesday night, so maybe I shouldn't even mention them. but someone's going to rise up from the West.
Okay, and so your update on what's going on down there in Portland.
Well, the big news story right now in Portland, I guess there's two, which is one, they changed the name of the Rose Garden to the Moda Center.
Yeah, I was very confused. They had an ad, and it was like pretty lights coming up at the Moda Center, and I was like, that must be like a smaller version of the Rose Garden. That must be like a room that they have in the Rose Garden.
No, sir, that's the whole thing. There was a good t-shirt I saw at the opener, which is someone was wearing it, had put together their own t-shirt that said, they don't call it the Moda City. So, the other controversy in Portland involves the free Chalupa giveaway that is such a big deal for Blazers fans, somewhat inexplicably, but they used to get free Chalupas from Taco Bell every time they scored 100 points in a game. Fans would chant, Chalupa, Chalupa. And so this year, Taco Bell pulled the promotion. The Blazers tried to scramble and do what they could and secured McDonald's as a sponsor with Egg McMuffins or Sausage McMuffins or some sort of breakfast sandwich. And people are flipping out about it. They are furious. They're still chanting Chalupa at the games instead of chanting Mickey D's, which is what they're trying to get them to chant.
I would much rather chant Chalupa than Mickey D's.
It's a better chant. I can't argue that. But still, like, you understand how terrible Chalupas are, right? Like, I don't want to be the one to judge eating fast food, but...
Okay. Taco Bell menu. In order of best items on the Taco Bell. Number one, I think personally, the gordita. Then you've got Doritos Locos Tacos, right?
Yeah.
Just for the interest of it, but I hear... I've only had one ever. I had the Cool Ranch Doritos Locos Taco at South by Southwest. Kind of found it inedible, but...
Inedible? They're good and miss.
But I would still rather have that than a Chalupa. Soft taco. I think there are people who get a bean burrito. Nacho Supreme.
Let's get the double-decker taco in there.
Double-decker
taco. I still
taco.
Eat that out of loyalty to the Hakim and Shaq ads from 1994.
There are a lot of menu items at Taco Bell before the Chalupa.
Well, I've never ordered a Chalupa independent of having a Chalupa coupon.
However, yelling Chalupa... Something I would much rather do over Mickey D's. Mickey D's, you're yelling the name of the fast food restaurant. And a weird abbreviation of it also.
Yeah, I mean, I admit there are problems with the chant, but it's just why the obsession over Chalupas. Like, you could be losing the game, and fans still let out an enormous cheer over the Chalupas. Like, we invented that promotion here in Seattle. We had it before anyone else. And, like,
the,
yeah.
Seattle was the first ever?
The Sonics were the first to do that.
Okay, here's your problem. We each did the same motion. The finger up to quiet the other person motion.
The official gesture of the Fabulous Pump.
We both should have just been quiet. Okay, I have a few things to say about this. First off, in Seattle, it was with Chalupas.
I'm pretty sure it was.
They had to score 110 points.
That is an important factor.
And the Sonics had to win.
Which the Blazers should absolutely do, because you shouldn't be celebrating a loss.
Fans should never be cheering at the end of the game in a loss. Right?
Yeah.
The game always needs to be the most important thing. Do you feel, like, judgmental about the Portland fans about this?
A little bit. And I love the Portland fans.
How many of those fans are redeeming their Chalupas?
I don't know.
It has to be a very low amount.
I mean, there's got to be some, because people are complaining about the fact that there's only a three-day window or whatever on the...
They want to save their Chalupa coupons
for one thing I will say in their defense is there were people that collected the Chalupa coupons and gave them to the homeless, which is putting it to very good use.
I agree. I think that's very good. And the issue is, moving to the McDonald's items, right?
Yeah.
Those are only available for a limited period of time in the day.
Yeah.
You've only got from, like, I don't know, 6 a.m., whenever McDonald's opens, through 10:30 or 11 on Sundays. So if you're collecting them for homeless people, which I'm obviously for and I think is the right thing to do, and is the best way to use your Chalupa or Sausage McMuffin coupons or whatever, and give those out to the homeless, but you want it to be an item that you could purchase at any time, right?
Yeah, and the Chalupa, the nice thing is you can get it on the way back from the game if
yes.
you are so inclined. I mean, look, I'm not saying that people should be happy about the change. I'm just saying there's a perspective here. In the grand scheme of everything that the Portland Trail Blazers do as an organization, the Chalupa is not that important.
I feel like you're saying that this is an important issue. You said you could talk for 45 minutes about Chalupas.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I have thoughts.
I have a lot of thoughts also. Another thing is that, so they're chanting Mickey D's, right?
Yes.
And when we were tailgating this weekend before the Seahawks game, and I'll talk about this later, where we had to park, because it's a travesty. We had to park farther down on 3rd Avenue, typically tailgate closer to the stadium on 3rd Avenue, and parked farther down adjacent to a McDonald's. And one of the people we were with, Jason, who was tailgating with us, called McDonald's every time Whack Arnold's. And I was like, what is that from? And
you didn't
remember
that?
It's from Chappelle Show sketch. But people don't like saying McDonald's, right? There's something about that name, and especially that abbreviation, Mickey D's. I don't know. There's the cachet. Taco Bell is a cool fast food restaurant. And McDonald's is not a cool fast food restaurant. You're in one of the coolest cities in the country, Portland. I have to say that on the Fabulous Portland cast. It is. Though undeniably, it's a cool city, right? And people are not, they can't get behind the conglomerate fast food restaurant. Taco Bell is like the fast food restaurant of the punk kids.
It is?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's the one that won out in Demolition Man and became the only fast food restaurant left. I think that makes it... And also, it's part of the KFC Pizza Hut. That's a much bigger group than the McDonald's group, isn't it?
Does not matter. Something about Taco Bell really speaks to you. And I have firsthand experience with this at the Vera Project, that the young punk kids at the Vera Project love Taco Bell. I was like, I'm into this. If we can't get whatever, like, vegan burritos or whatever, the next best choice is Taco Bell.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been ideal. If they could have gotten, like, it's a free donut at Voodoo, that would have been a very Portland thing to do.
I mean, that would be a lot of donuts.
It would be a lot of donuts. You want to know the greatest food promotion ever that
what
I got?
That?
I went to L.A. on my way to San Diego in the summer of 2000, and we went to a Dodgers game. And they had a promotion that if the Dodgers threw a shutout, you got a half dozen Krispy Kreme donuts. And so
half dozen. It should be something exclusive, though. We have talked for a long time about Chalupas. But
0.45 minutes.
But the issue is 100 points is not that many points.
No, it happens almost every game.
You should be really excited about getting this thing. It should be 120 points.
I don't know. People are really excited about getting this thing, first off.
They don't actually use it, though. It should be a free Voodoo donut. And it should be if the Blazers score 120 points and win. It should happen once or twice a season so that you're so excited about it that, like, there's no build-up to it. Scoring 100 points? Who cares? Everybody does that these days.
But the other thing is it should be based on a defensive category. The Lakers do 2 jack-in-the-box tacos if they hold the opponent under 100 points and win.
Now, that's interesting, especially because they got the hustle board up there at the Moda Center.
They do, but it's less incentive for players to be, like, shooting at the end of close games to get the fans chalupas. It's a much better promotion to do defensive.
It kind of creates the other team as villains, too, if they're getting back
in. It really does, yeah.
That's a really good idea for the Lakers.
That's what whenever we talked about this as the Storm, when I worked there, I was very clear that we should do a defensive promotion.
For the Storm, it should have been if somebody dunks.
Yeah. I think at that point, you know, you just start buying dinner for everyone. If the Storm player dunks.
If somebody dunks, Karen Bryant will personally take you out to dinner. There'll be a coupon. It's redeemed. I would love for that to happen. I would be really excited about my dinner with Karen Bryant. Like, I hope I'm there. I've got a lot of things to say to you. Do you have anything? I got a lot to make up there.
I think that covers the Blazers chalupas.
You're covered for chalupas.
Yeah, I could go another half hour if we needed to, but we've got other stuff to discuss.
We do. The next thing to discuss is not depressing. Good news. Seahawks won on Sunday against Tampa Bay.
Hey!
It was very close. The atmosphere in the stadium for a second was a little bit grim, but I think everybody kind of felt that the Seahawks were going to pull it out. It was one of those things where it's like, Tampa Bay is a bad team.
That's true.
The Seahawks are a good team.
That's true.
The Seahawks are at home.
That was true.
We have one of the most clutch quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yep.
Got beast mode.
Yep.
Best defense in the NFL. All of these things, and Tampa Bay was a little bit fluky that Tampa Bay went up 21-0. I really, really felt for a long time. However, when Tampa Bay drove to begin the second half and hit that field goal, the mood kind of went down a little bit. We were all really fired up after halftime. They honored the 83-84 Seahawks team. It went down a little bit when Tampa Bay drove and hit a field goal, but felt that they would come back. But obviously raised some questions.
I would say first off that the only time I got really worried is when I looked at the clock and there was like 8 minutes left in the third quarter when the Seahawks were making their first drive after that field goal. And I was like, wait a second, there's only 23 minutes left in the game. That's not that long to score. I think it was what, two touchdowns and a field goal at that point?
It was 24-7.
Yeah, so you needed to do that and not let them score at all. And then as it turned out, the Seahawks really effectively had three scoring touchdown drives and a field goal in that span.
And,
so.
And on the play that Russell Wilson threw the interception at the goal line, it really felt, even after that happened, that they would still come back. But if they would have gotten a touchdown there, they would have won regulation.
Yeah.
I mean, the Seahawks, they had it rolling. It was really one of the first times that I felt like the offense was just humming in a long time.
And it's been hard to get into that rhythm, it feels like, for a long period of time. One of the thoughts I had while watching the first half was that part of the issue is there just weren't enough drives in that first half. The Seahawks had a couple of situations where they stalled out on, they were facing fourth and two or something, but it wasn't close enough to midfield to go for it. And then you had the Jermaine Kearse fumble, and all of a sudden you barely touched the football in an entire half. And I was wondering whether their deliberate style is actually a detriment because of the fact that it means they don't have as many chances. Also, especially against a bad team, the more possessions you have, the less likely one fluke play is going to impact the game.
We talked about this. Really, the bigger issue there was how much time Tampa Bay was taking off the clock, though. And that came from how well they were running the ball.
And that's the concern to me, is the offense, they were fine. Russell Wilson's not going to throw two interceptions in the red zone ever again, probably.
Never again in his entire career. In his lustrous 20-year career of 10 Super Bowls.
This is 2 weeks in a row that other teams have run the football in the Seahawks, and that is a bit of a worry to me.
It is a worry. We should talk about what the threat level is. I don't know what that exactly means. Threat level is midnight.
No. Like the, the Homeland Security.
Homeland Security threat levels. Okay.
So I don't know. I think we're either guarded or elevated. Okay. We're definitely not at high or severe.
So the options: low, guarded, elevated, high, severe.
So before a couple weeks ago, we were at low. We were definitely in the green. And then, to me, the St. Louis game pushed us to guarded, and I think the Tampa Bay game may have taken us to elevated.
I'm much more scared than you are.
So you're at, like, a severe?
I started out at severe. You need to be at severe when the margin is so low, right? Okay, so this one loss.
I'm weirdly flaccid about this team.
You're weirdly flaccid about this?
Placid.
Oh.
Placid with a P. Like, I was not worried that entire St. Louis game until the last
one. I know, you were not scared enough.
And I was not worried that much most of the Tampa Bay game. Like,
okay, and I've talked about this a lot, right? During Richard Sherman's Defensive Player of the Year season, I've talked about this a lot. The Seahawks don't need to have the number one seed to go to the Super Bowl, but it would be very nice.
It certainly increases their chances.
Having the number one seed in the playoffs, I'm going to knock on wood when I say this. I just getting there is the most important thing. Would almost guarantee that the Seahawks are going to go to the Super Bowl.
Wow. Almost guarantee? I'm not going that far.
Have you seen the 49ers play in Seattle?
I have.
Most likely they would have to play the 49ers. Colin Kaepernick, I don't know what to compare him to. But I think that one of them was in the toilet earlier today. And that is what I would compare Colin Kaepernick to when playing in Seattle.
I feel like eventually Colin Kaepernick could put together a Mike Lennon-like game. <in Seattle.
laughs> Colin Kaepernick in his perfect game. I mean, a lot of credit to Mike Lennon, though. Mike Lennon played a really good game on Sunday. And Mike James also. Honestly, Tampa Bay looked like a competent team.
And even Greg Schiano seemed to coach pretty well.
His game plan was great. I mean, they didn't throw at Browner or Sherman, really. There are very, very few passes to either of them.
Picked on the linebackers.
And they clearly saw what Seattle's weakness was and picked on it.
Yeah.
But when you need that number one seed, which the Seahawks, again, they don't need the number one seed, but when it would be very nice to have the number one seed, the margins are so low that you cannot lose a game.
I just think that you look around the National Football League, Kansas City struggles to win at Buffalo.
Kansas City's not very good.
Lose at the Jets. But there's
the
not...
Saints also, those teams have way bigger flaws than San Francisco has.
There's a handful of teams that have been dominating, and they've been doing it against weak schedules. I mean, Carolina falls into that category. And yes, San Francisco, before their bye, does fall into that category. But again, they lost at home to Indianapolis, and that's why we're where we are.
The threat level has to be at severe all the time. What is the point of being lower guarded? You should be scared 24 hours a day about the Seahawks.
Can I make a point to you that I just thought of right now? It's been building, but like, you know how it used to be same old Seahawks when they'd lose a game?
Yes.
Now same old Seahawks means they're going to win games like this. That's the same old Seahawks now.
I don't think that thought just came to you, because you said that after the Monday night game against the Rams.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, that's a second time that you've thought that.
Well, I must be losing my short-term memory.
You said that while we were standing, but right there.
Huh.
That this is the same old Seahawks, that they pull it out and win. Threat level severe. That's what I say. They need to win every game. This weekend...
I'm clearly not convincing you in this
will be. There's no convincing me. The Seahawks need to go 15-1. They control their own destiny. They have to control their own destiny.
They need to go 15-1.
We cannot count on San Francisco losing another game.
I think we should just assume that everyone is going to lose games because it's the National Football League and everyone loses games. And it's the NBA and everyone makes a run.
So, after this weekend, this is a big weekend.
It is.
And this weekend, it feels kind of crazy to think how big of a weekend this could be for playoff seeding. I'm very nervous about the Seahawks game. But if the Seahawks, let's say hypothetically the Seahawks win at Atlanta, and after that we're going to be watching Carolina and San Francisco, which I'm very excited for. And if Carolina beats San Francisco, our chances of getting that one seed increase so significantly.
They do. I mean, Football Outsiders still has it pretty high, right?
They have it at like 70%. So, I don't care about the Football Outsiders playoff odds report.
Just
right
now. Okay, I won't even bring that up to you. Do you have any level of concern about the offense at this point?
No.
So it's strictly the run defense?
It really is the run defense. I thought Russell Wilson looked good. I actually thought the offense looked the best on Sunday that it's looked for a really long time. I think that Sunday was encouraging in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, the difference in level of play wasn't reflected by the scoreboard. In the first half, Tampa Bay wasn't as dominant as it appeared, and in the second half, the Seahawks were much more dominant than even the scoreboard showed.
Yes. I mean, Marshawn Lynch ran really well against a good run defense. Russell Wilson played like a damn near perfect game in the second half, except for that one kind of fluky pick at the goal line. I thought everybody was humming. You would not have even noticed that Sidney Rice wasn't out there.
Even the line held its own.
The line played pretty well. I mean, that's kind of the biggest concern going forward. But you know that you're going to get Russell Okung and Breno Giacomini back. And the bye,
sooner rather than later.
The bye week is kind of just like lingering there. You know, you've got to get through these next 2 weeks. Then you have the bye week. Then things really start going. That's when it really starts happening on the week after that bye week. And it seems like then all the dogs are going to be there. Everybody's going to be there. As long as, knock on wood, we don't lose anybody in the next 2 weeks. Russell Wilson doesn't get hit too much playing against Atlanta and Minnesota.
That is the worry, yeah.
That's the time. And it's the exit of the bye week at pretty much the exact right time. You want that later bye week to give, you know, to let your players be damaged throughout the year and then give them the 2 weeks off. But let's look at Atlanta really quickly here and look at some of their strengths and weaknesses.
I thought it was kind of encouraging that they were in the game for a half at Carolina. I mean, the Panthers, I think we can agree, are a juggernaut at this point.
It's true.
But, you know, Matt Ryan is still really good. He's got, I think, you know, like, they're just taking guys off the street and having them play wide receiver at this point, but along with Tony Gonzalez. But, you know, they're producing. He's still a top 10 quarterback, despite not having Julio Jones and despite not having Roddy White for an extended period of time.
It seems like it hasn't affected the Atlanta's passing game as much as you would have expected. Tony Gonzalez is still playing at a pretty high level. And you mentioned that Harry Douglas is playing really well this season. He's kind of filled in for Julio Jones and turned into like kind of a legit number one wide receiver.
Well, let's be clear that no one fills in for Julio Jones, but especially on my fantasy team.
I know, you should have been handcuffing Julio Jones with Harry Douglas.
But he's done a really nice job, as despite the fact that he was a below replacement player by Football Outsiders metrics two of the last 3 years. That's why it stunned me to see that.
Atlanta kind of has no run game at this point. I mean, Steven Jackson's corpse isn't doing too much out there. Jacquizz Rodgers, who I thought once he got an opportunity, I thought Jacquizz Rodgers would play well, but he was averaging kind of in the 3 yards per carry range.
Well, part of that is their offensive line hasn't been very good.
They've done good pass blocking, but the run game just is not there for Atlanta. So it'll be very curious to see this week going forward if the Seahawks can shut down that run game like a lot of other teams have. If they can't shut down Jacquizz Rodgers, Jason Snelling, and Steven Jackson against Atlanta's pretty terrible run blocking, it's going to be... We're going to threat level midnight.
Your threat level is going to 11.
That's... I don't know what's past severe.
The interesting thing to me is, in theory, Tony Gonzalez against the Seahawks linebackers is a really bad matchup. But on the other hand, there's the strategy that has developed since, I think it was the New England game, mm-hmm. where you treat Tony Gonzalez like he's a gunner on a punt return, and you stick two guys on him and just have them beat him up at the line of scrimmage and just try to take him out of the play completely. And, you know, I think there was one play where Carolina let him run free for a touchdown on Sunday. But otherwise, that has been an extremely effective strategy this season.
And Carolina's secondary is still not very good. That was a play where he ran free, which I think Kuechly thought he was handing him off to a safety, and the safety wasn't there. That's not going to happen with the Seahawks, where they're going to get so completely lost that Tony Gonzalez is going to run free for a touchdown.
Hopefully.
But I do agree with you that he's a concern if they don't do that. I mean, you have to pay attention to everybody with Atlanta. They still have a good offense.
But I think that's part of why the other wide receivers, you know, the Harry Douglases, the Drew Davises of the world, are playing as well as they are, is because of all the attention that Tony Gonzalez is getting.
So the plays on the other side of the ball, Atlanta, they kind of look kind of similar to Tampa Bay. Pretty good in run defense, pretty terrible in the secondary. I know that they have kind of a depleted secondary, and they're starting rookie Desmond Trufant back there.
Well, they've been starting him all year.
But their pass defense has not been good this season. So it's another place where I think that, and again, this is really similar to what we said last week, and it's kind of what played out. Pete Carroll wants to establish the run again.
Oh, yeah.
The Seahawks come out running the ball. I think they'll probably run more this week than they did last week, and especially assuming that they're not going to go down 21-0. Hoping that they're not going to go throw level severe, that they're not going to go down 21-0. But it is a situation where they'll come out, run the ball, and when those options to pass open up, it's going to be huge.
Do we have any concern about a 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific start time, or is that now something that we're not worried about?
You know, I think it's kind of gone. I think that coming out sludgy, coming out lackadaisical, without the energy in the beginning of the game, I think in that Colts game, they really just exploded.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing, is the game that they've lost this season, there was their best start maybe of the entire year at 10 a.m. on the East Coast, and then just not good after that.
I really have faith that the offense can build off what they did in that Tampa Bay game and just keep humming. I think maybe they turn it around. Maybe the second half of that Tampa Bay game, I might be naive, I might be at threat level low right now, but I think that it was the best the offense has looked. It was the first situation all season where the Seahawks got the ball, and I was like, they're going to score.
But don't you think part of that is because of the situation, because of the fact that they needed to score?
The exigency of the situation?
Yeah.
It's true, but, I mean, it seems like they'll be able to take that energy and be able to take that perspective and translate it to this week.
I guess I'm more elevated on the offense than you are.
You're literally at threat level elevated.
what do we think as far as a percentage chance of winning the game on Sunday? This may be the least fun one to do all year.
The least fun? Which of these are fun? I don't know.
I mean, Tampa Bay, like, you knew you weren't going to say, oh, it's a 50%, it's a toss-up with Tampa Bay.
The least fun one would be.
I've told some of our readers, by the way, where our listeners were, like, waiting to say that we were too cocky about the Tampa Bays, even though it was a 16-point spread.
Who was that, Katie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Obviously.
Some of our readers, everybody who reads the transcript, the written transcript that comes along with the Fabulous Pelton cast.
You have to send a self-addressed envelope.
It'll be mailed within 4 to 6 months. I put it at 50%.
I mean, I think I'm a little more optimistic than that. Again, there's
I'm really scared.
They're what, 6.5 points favorites this week?
Yeah, it's somewhere around there. I think it depends on where you're looking, but it's between 6.5 and... And even more than that.
So I think it's more than a 50. I think it's 60%.
I am really scared about this game.
That's a lot of room to lose.
Okay, one of two things will happen. There's a little bit of prediction time.
Is this a Fabulous Pelton guarantee? Or
One of two things will happen. The Seahawks will either come out and crush the Falcons. I think that there's... a 15% chance, maybe even higher, that they come out blitzkrieg and destroy that team from the very beginning. There's a little bit of the vendetta that we should have against Atlanta.
Oh yeah, we haven't talked about that.
Haven't forgotten that tough loss last year in a game that the Seahawks probably should have won.
Yeah.
They haven't forgotten about that. Their offense looked really good at the end of that game. We clearly have a better team than Atlanta has. And they started out the Indianapolis game really well, and one or two things went wrong, kind of fluky things, and the whole thing turned south. But they could have beaten Indianapolis by 30 points the way it started out. I think that if things go right from the beginning of the game, the Seahawks win 45-10.
Wow. That's threat level elevated.
Or it's either going to be a Seahawks blowout or another game where it comes down to literally the last play.
I can definitely see that. I could see Steven Hauschka being involved in the conclusion of this one again.
I think that...
Or Matt Bryan, is the case, maybe.
I think that one of those two things will happen. Obviously, I'm hoping for the former. If we can come out and not even worry. You know, sometimes when I watch football games, I try not to do this with the Seahawks, but sometimes I think it... I kind of want them to be close games just to make it more interesting. I do not want this to be a close game.
I do not want any of them to be close games.
Sometimes at home I think that, and I always hate myself for thinking that when it is a close game, but it was a more fun game on Sunday.
Yeah, if you know they're going to win, it's a fun.
It was a more fun game on Sunday than something like the Tampa Bay game was.
If you can guarantee it's
going to be. Or something like the Tennessee game was.
If you can guarantee it's going to be a win, then
I want this one to be they come out and crush the Falcons, and then we can rest for the second half, be calm, and then gear up to watching the 49ers and the Panthers, which is a huge game.
I'm really looking forward to that.
It reminds me of last year's game, which was the San Francisco in New England, where New England went way, way down and then caught up and then blew it because of the Deshaun Goldson long fumble return. But that game ended up, at the time I was panicked about it, and I think you might have been mocking me for being panicked about it, and it ended up meaning that the Seahawks didn't win the division. If the 49ers would have lost that game, the Seahawks would have won the division, and the whole season would have gone differently. They still would have had to go at Atlanta, but they would have hosted a first-round playoff game.
Well, they would have hosted, they would have had a bye then, right?
I don't know. I
would say Green Bay would have had the bye. Green Bay had
a bye. I don't remember the exact details of that, but they would have hosted a game. So anyway, I'm sure this long talk, I have no idea what minute we're at, but I feel like we've been talking for a really long time here. But 42 minutes, not bad. So here we are at the 42-minute mark. Feel free to edit that out. So we turn our attention to tailgating, and I have to say, so we're coming up upon a two-tailgate weekend. No, yep. A one-tailgate weekend, sorry. Yep. We're coming up on tailgating for the Huskies, which we haven't done for a couple weekends. But I have to give a really quick shout-down to Emeralds, an official Fabulous Pelton Cast shout down.
This is our very first.
I normally be a shout out because I feel like shout in sounded really weird. An official shout down to Emerald City Auto Supply, where we used to tailgate for Seahawks games and Sounders games and Husky games when they were playing at Central Link Field.
There's a lot of tailgates there.
And maybe if we ever went to a Mariners game, we'd tailgate there too. It has been demolished.
I don't know why you're blaming Emerald City Auto Supply for this. It was their going out of business that allowed you to tailgate there. And
I don't know who to blame. I have to blame somebody.
Yeah, you don't know who the new owner of
that property
is.
There was a closed business on 3rd Avenue, very close to the perfect tailgating area, and we lived it up there. There was an awning if it rained. It was the perfect place to tailgate, and it has been closed. First, there was a fence around where we tailgated, and then the whole building was demolished.
I would say don't mourn the death of Emerald City Auto Supply as a place to tailgate. Celebrate that it ever lived as a place to tailgate.
Wow. That was wise. I this last weekend, so we had to move farther. We went down very early to this game, knowing that Emerald City Auto Supply was closed. Went down to the game at 8 a.m. for a 1 p.m. start, which is pretty early, and still barely found a spot.
That's crazy.
And we had to find a spot pretty far south on 3rd Avenue, and then tailgate on the sidewalk. Fortunately, it was a beautiful Seattle day on Sunday, though.
It was.
It was pretty much sunny all day. It was a pretty good tailgate, and I have to give an official Fabulous Pelton Cast shout up! We're turning into, like, shock jock radio here.
We need, like, a sound effect to drop in here.
We need sound effects. An official Fabulous Pelton Cast shout up to Total Wine and More. Wow, does that place have a lot of beer.
You were so excited that you texted me while I was down in Portland to tell me how excited you were about their selection.
Well, I actually texted you that you need to get Snapchat because I have, quote unquote, so many things to Snapchat you.
So many beers.
I said so many beers to Snapchat
you? Yeah, you said so many things to Snapchat me, I would have been a little more frightened.
Oh, God. You still have that Snapchat connotation that it's people, it's like teenagers sending...
I really do.
Sending their private parts around.
Private parts?
Just all junk pictures. But Total Wine & More, the selection there, I'd never been there before. It'd been recommended to me. You and I have to go one time. They had...
Maybe record a podcast there.
A live podcast. They'll be like, first people coming up to it and be like, do you need any help? What are you doing? Be like, no. We're just recording a podcast in our radio voices right now.
Could be very good at publicity for them. Obviously, we're not going to get that McDonald's sponsorship anytime soon.
Yeah, whack Arnold's. But there was like six full aisles of beer. They have a section of individual beer that you could get like a six-pack holder for and pick out and make your own six-pack of individual beer.
That's classy.
They had it broken down by seasonal. So they had a section for 22-ounce or larger individual bottles that you would purchase, a section for seasonal, and then a section for basically every different way you could want your beer. I've been searching for Rainier in the Bottle at various places, and they had two different size packs of Rainier in the Bottle.
Wow.
It's amazing. I mean, everything that delivers here, I'd forgotten that. An official shout down to Russian River Brewing Company. I had forgotten that Russian River, I'm officially shouting down things a lot here, I like it.
I was going to officially shout down the state of Washington for the same topic, but...
You were, why?
Wasn't it like their restrictions and stuff?
Oh, really? I mean, a lot of good breweries distribute to Washington. Who is Russian River to think that they can't distribute to Washington?
I mean, I think Russian River is who they think they are.
An official shout down for Russian River Brewing Company for not distributing to Washington. I would really like to have some Russian River beers. It's all out of sadness that the shutdown comes from. But they obviously don't have any of those. But there's so much stuff. So I ended up getting like a 22-ounce bottle of Deschutes Chasin' Freshies seasonal. It was delicious.
Well, I went to research on the Deschutes website to find out a little bit more about
Chasin' Freshies. Oh,
did you? And here are some pairings.
It's Chasin' Freshies, a fresh hop IPA seasonal.
And that does sound good. But pairings include spicy redfish stew.
I make that all the time.
Green chili cheeseburger.
Very specific.
Herbed crepes with smoked salmon and radishes.
Herbed crepes? This is what Portland is like. These are things that are actually happening in Portland.
Farmer's cheese and raisin phyllo strudel.
I don't know what those words are.
I know what they are individually, except for phyllo, but
farmer's
together.
Cheese and... Well, I can tell you that we were eating McDonald's. McDonald's across the street is what was paired with the Chasin' Freshies beer. I don't know if I ordered a farmer's cheese and raisin phyllo strudel on McDonald's. But
they only serve that until 10:30.
But it was a delicious beer. You have to try it.
I definitely will.
And then also they had a big selection of Southern Tier beers at the Total Wine & More out of New York. And it had come highly recommended before. They make the Pumpkin beer, which I said that I didn't like on podcast number one. And I ended up getting...
It's hard to keep track of everything that you've said on the podcast that you hate.
Shout-ups, shutdowns, things like that. A Southern Tier Live Pale Ale, which is also really delicious. And then, of course, the Sierra Nevada Tumbler.
Well, that all sounds very good, and I'm disappointed I missed out. The one experience I had, which is not quite tailgating, but I thought we should talk about it, in Portland, I went to Poke Folk, which is like...
Would you like to give that?
I'll give that a shout-up.
An official?
An official Peltoncast shout up.
Yes.
It was pretty delicious.
Official Peltoncast Yelp review.
That sounds like the logical endpoint of this, and it sounds terrible. It was like the last like really highly rated Portland restaurant that I've never been to because I go to Screen Door way too often, or just the right amount.
God, you are not in the town all day.
I
if you could say that you've been to a restaurant in Portland way too often...
You know that that's the only place that they have NBA basketball in the Pacific Northwest.
Okay, fine. Now that Vancouver's gone.
Yes. RIP Grizzlies. As I was saying, it was delicious, and definitely make sure that you get the fish wings if you go there. Not just you personally, but anyone listening.
Now, so I did some research on Poke Poke. And they have an adjacent bar.
They do.
And you did not go to the adjacent bar.
I did not, because we went for a late lunch. There was no... That's usually, like, you're waiting in line because it's so crowded to try to get in there.
People in Portland are very willing to wait in line.
So willing to wait
in line. If we can summarize the fabulous Portland cast, people in Portland really like chalupas. Like waiting in lines.
And like the Timbers. I know.
That's what we did talk about their crowd. Don't want to speak of those people.
It's kind of weird because you would think that we would be similar on this aspect. We've got the same weather, obviously. But I guess it's the fact that in Portland, they're living such a Portlandia lifestyle. And Seattle, being the big city, is so all go, 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 always on the move. And we can't wait in lines.
Fast-paced lifestyle.
I mean, I think the longest line that I've waited in Seattle would have to be, like, Portage Bay.
That's true, which is not that long of a line. It's not like Portland wait. No, but I think that maybe, and I heard somebody on Twitter suggested this to you also, that you didn't get the full Poke Poke experience by not going to the bar first.
I may have missed out, but, there'll be more times. Yeah, I plan to go back.
If you aren't at the screen door all day.
Well.
Portland.
There's more than one meal a day, thankfully.
Is there? That's a weird thing to say. You have more than one meal in Portland today?
Sometimes. If I'm spending the entire day there.
I'm unclear what you're talking about.
I'm just saying that I could go to Screen Door for brunch and then go to Poke Poke for dinner. Although the Screen Door brunch is like an entire full day's worth of eating.
And then we wrap up with fantasy football. So this is... We're recording this on a Wednesday night. And you have promised me... Do you still promise this even...
Yeah, I'm not going to change my...
That you're not going to change your fantasy waiver claims. So we're willing to talk about who we have waiver claims in for. And then I have a couple recommendations also if they're not claimed.
So my number one waiver claim was on Nick Foles.
I know, you love Nick Foles.
Well, he did throw 7 touchdowns. He did tie the NFL record. And I am desperately in need of a quarterback because Alex Smith was a disaster for me last week and is on bye. And Kaepernick is unplayable against the Panthers. Okay. They're too good defensively.
My number one claim is on the Titans' defense.
And that's my number two claim.
How interesting. The Titans are playing the Jaguars at home. And there are a few good defenses out there. If I don't get the Titans defense, it's not going to be the end of the world. Quote me on that tomorrow. It's not going to be the end of the world. But I've got the Chiefs on bye this week. I've been riding the Chiefs pretty hard lately. And is that weird? Wait, is that weird?
No.
Okay.
It was appropriate.
Okay, appropriate. So I need a fill-in defense for this week. I haven't looked at who they're playing next week, actually.
I've looked at who the Chiefs are, who the Texans are playing next
week. Who the Titans are playing next week. Yeah. The Chiefs are playing at Denver,
yeah.
So I might need to find another defense for next week. Also, I don't know if I'm going to roll the dice with the Chiefs at Denver.
All right, so my next waiver claim, in case I didn't get them, was the Dolphins defense.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know who'd you go with as your backup defense?
I'm just going to claim somebody who's out there.
Well, that's risky.
I didn't know. I want to change these now. I didn't know you were doing multiple. You got like 10 claims there. Okay, so my next waiver claim is for...
First off, when your roster is as bad as mine, you need a lot of waiver claims.
My next claim is for Rashad Jennings. I have him in for Mike Tolbert, who was a really nice one-week fill-in for me when Sean Moreno was on bye. He got a 9, picked up the touchdown. And Mike Tolbert's pretty much good for a touchdown. But Rashad Jennings, I mean, I'm just taking a flyer here. Just in case Darren McFadden ends up being out for the year and he continues to play well. I probably will have Rashad Jennings for 1 week and then drop him.
I would under no scenario play a Raiders running back.
He got a 23 last week.
Terrell Pryor is their running back.
He got a 23 last week, and Darren McFadden is looking very, very questionable.
You can't tell me nothing.
Okay.
Next up for me, in case I don't get Nick Foles, I have Jay Cutler. I don't even know for sure if he's going to play, but he would be more valid for me long term. And if he doesn't play, then I'm just going to... probably pick up Christian Ponder.
I don't think that's bad.
Christian Ponder's got he's had a pretty nice fantasy season. Have you checked out his stats?
Are we talking about the same person?
Yeah.
Christian Ponder?
The Christian Ponder.
He's barely played.
But when he's played, he's been effective in fantasy terms.
I don't always play Christian Ponder.
He's got a 21, a 14, and a 17 in the last 3 games he's played.
I think they should have been starting
him. And he's playing the Redskins this week.
I think it was a mistake not starting Christian Ponder.
So you could be looking at Christian Ponder starting quarterback.
I've got a quarterback recommendation for the following weeks, which I'll talk about in a second. But first I want to say my next claim, which is for Shane Vereen.
And that's a good call.
The Patriots are on bye this week. Shane Vereen is eligible to come back next week because he was on the short-term IR. And he's already in practice, so he should be back next week.
And he's probably going to get all the carries over Stephen Ridley because that's what.
Well, I mean, he's got a pretty crowded Patriots backfield with Stephen Ridley, Brendan Bolden, LeGarrette Blount, and Shane Vereen. You never really know who's going to get the carries there. I don't know. Shane Vereen would have to completely take over that job for me to actually play him, but he feels like he should be on a roster.
All right, my last claim was on the Texans' defense, and that's looking ahead because they have consecutive games against Oakland and Jacksonville in the next 2 weeks.
And my quarterback recommendation is kind of in the same vein, which is for Case Keenum. Case Keenum has played really well when he has played. He had a 28 this last week against Indianapolis. And then they play at Arizona, who Football Outsiders actually says is the best defense in the NFL. So I wouldn't start him there, but then they host Oakland, host Jacksonville, and host New England, and then followed by at Jacksonville. That is just a series of bad defenses all in a row. 4 weeks in a row, and one of those is in the fantasy playoffs at Jacksonville.
I'm still a little skeptical that he has really the arm strength to pull this off when teams know what's coming.
Just in Case Keenum, you don't get Nick Foles.
I'm not laughing at that. I'm not going to reward that.
Why would I reward I don't like it? Anything about that. Yeah, I also thought Aaron Dobson was kind of an interesting option. I think Aaron Dobson is coming alive as a fantasy player and as just a wide receiver. I think he's finally kind of putting it together. So that was an option. There are a few other players out there. I think Doug Baldwin is not necessarily a bad fantasy option. Yeah. I mean, it depends on the return of Percy Harvin, but I think that Doug Baldwin is probably worth being on a team right now. I think that's it.
Well, you know who had a pretty good fantasy week last week?
Who was that?
Jermaine Kearse.
Oh, yeah.
2 catches for 43 yards and a touchdown. He lost 2 points for a fumble on the kickoff return, but still finished with an 8.
Nice.
And is now up to, for the season, a 29. So he continues to dominate Vic Ballard in that. But, sadly, he's up to also now owned in 0.5% of fantasy leagues.
Wow.
0.1% from last week. However, ESPN analysis still says he's not a fantasy consideration.
Wow. So ESPN analysis kind of hates Jermaine Kearse.
They do, but they give him a projection of 4 this week.
Well, there you go.
I think that wraps it up. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.